views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
Roller coaster's scurry, dude. They're scurry, all right?
No, not as scary as the terrible special effects in the House on Haunted Hill remake.
Fair.
Holy shit.
Fair.
Yeah.
That was in the Uncanny Valley area of special effects where they did all CGI with no practical, and it was all garbage.
Yeah, fair.
Yep, especially I remember that.
Especially
era.
The big, like, finale of the ghost glob of CGI chasing him through the house. I was like, really?
Oh, yeah.
This is...
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrible. But again, it's kind of like you can laugh at it because a couple of the kills are actually good.
Man, that smoke monster through the 90s and early 2000s got a lot of fucking work.
It was shit.
It was in
That's
Lost.
True.
It was in the Green Lantern movie.
Yeah. Can we not talk about what
Fantastic
the
Four?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah. That's
fucking goddamn it.
Yep.
Those movies.
Jesus.
Yeah, but like, I love the Haunted House movies, but I think that's why I kind of like House on Haunted Hill is because it's all practical because of the era or camera tricks.
Sure.
But also, it lives in the space between is there anything paranormal happening or is it all just like people fucking with each other? And I love that where you kind of. Leaves it open to the fact, even at the end, where the guy's like, "No, but there are ghosts. No, really, there are."
You know,
that's why I like Midnight Club though too, because it had a lot of that conversation of, "Is this the medication these terminally ill kids are on, or are they actually seeing ghosts?" And like,
but they pulled back from what they were doing in the 90s, where they were like trying to flex all the CGI budget they had. And now stuff like Hereditary, where like the little fucking detail in the off corner of the screen, when you notice it, is the most terrifying fucking thing you've ever seen. You're like, what the fuck is that?
And there were definitely plenty of parts in that in the Midnight Club, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's Flanagan.
Little detail.
Well, like,
it's Flanagan.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And one thing, and I think this is why he was the perfect choice to adapt this from Christopher Pike, is that you see it in... the haunting movies he's done, you've seen it in Midnight Mass, you've seen it in even Dr. Sleep. His conversation about terminally ill people or people that are really sick or really old and their relationship with death, there is this attitude that death isn't something to fear, death is a kindness. And that is something that is absolutely translated in this series, in definitely in Dr. Sleep, with the main character being a hospice nurse.
Of course,
you could thank King for that.
Yeah,
fair. Yes. Just correct. Yeah, that. Yeah,
but,
just saying.
But also, like, the way there is this very delicate, like, kindness. And he paces these characters properly where it gives it that negative space to really fill in that this is something important. This is maybe one of the most important moments in a person's life is the end of it.
Yeah.
So, it's dealt with delicate hands and done so well. And when you're talking about dying kids,
that's always a rough take. Period. Yeah. No, regardless of what you're doing,
So I love that the kids were giving each other shit. I love that there were really dark jokes about them dying throughout, and it didn't shy away from the reality of these kids have to deal with dying every day. You know that?
Yeah.
Well, you think about it, like all the themes you're just talking about there. Putting that together as a series that works, that brings all those themes together successfully as a director.
Incredible.
There's maybe a handful of people that can do that.
Yep.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
It's a huge undertaking.
So this is just really further proof that Mike Flanagan is a modern like icon of horror. And he's
absolutely
up there in the conversation with some of the greats, some of the great directors of horror. His ability to navigate the conversation about not just faith, but death and our relationship with it is really nuanced and complicated and messy sometimes, but always human. Always human. Like, all the characters are always human. It's beautiful. And, man, it caught my feelings a few times.
Absolutely.
A few? Holy shit.
Oh,
be prepared to get, like...
Every episode, at least twice per episode,
So, yeah, we're going to talk about that, and Mike Flanagan, but primarily we're going to be talking about The Midnight Club, the new series available on Netflix, directed by Mike Flanagan, from the Christopher Pike book. And if you are unfamiliar, please go check it out. It is an incredible series. It's very bingeable. And come back and listen to this episode. This is our last Potoween episode of the season. So, Yeah, but buckle up. We're going to have a great time talking about The Midnight Club on Geeks Under the Influence. Welcome.
Whee!
Come visit work and shall be again.
party with cancer. Oh.
Party with dead kids. Woo!
Yay! Yeah. Son of a bitch.
I definitely didn't know what to expect going into this series because of the subject matter. Like, it's such a delicate balance. So relieved that it was dealt with so well.
Well, it caught me off guard because I was super excited that Flanagan's next thing was going to be the fall of the House of Usher. Right. After coming off of Midnight Mass, I was like, holy fucking shit, this guy can do no wrong. And this thing kind of snuck up on me. It's like, wait, what's this YA shit he's doing? He did what?
It's not YA.
No, it's like, not. It really isn't. But that was the first thing I read a few months ago. I was just like, wait, he's not doing fall next? And he's doing some like kids book shit? What?
Yeah.
But I will say, if you also look up the actors on through the IMDb and stuff, most of the actors in the Midnight Club will be in the fall of House of Usher. He's become one of those where he's starting to reuse the right actors
becoming,
and stuff.
He's done that from the beginning.
Yeah, no, he's talking about he's got his cast.
Yeah, yeah. He's reused so many people in everything he's done.
Well, more noticeable between Midnight Mass, this, and then looking at the IMDb for the fall of House of Usher, it's way more noticeable now.
Well, I think also these actors, they're kind of getting known because of the Mike Flanagan movies and shows.
Yeah.
So the names are becoming more familiar to us as they're going along. Like, isn't he married to one of the actresses?
Yeah, he's married to the main
chick. Yeah, and I was waiting for her in the series, and I think she showed up. She played like the mom in the flashback, right? Where,
oh yeah,
with a lot of makeup on, where like the redhead.
Yes,
back in the past, went to go visit. Yeah. I was like, there she is.
But that's what he does. He'll put that, like he did that with Gerald's Game. She was the mom in the flashback where
Mary
Thomas was doing nasty pedo shit.
Speaking of,
but anyway,
met Henry Thomas at the last con in Williamsburg. Rest in peace. Scares a care. But he basically brought Henry Thomas back the way Quentin Tarantino brought back John Travolta.
Yeah,
absolutely.
In everything now, and all the roles are fucking solid as shit.
Side note: Tarantino kind of also brought back Kurt Russell. If you think about it.
Can we also give a cheers to Flanagan bringing Heather Langenkamp back out?
Oh, yes!
Yes, that was awesome.
Yes, she was fantastic. Amazing.
Very awesome. No,
that was solid.
There's unfamiliar with the name. It's Nancy from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Yes.
And she was great. She was fantastic.
Yeah, she did a great job.
Wonderful in this.
But yeah, let's get into our cast of characters here. First off, of course, is the Geek Father himself, Scotty P.
Hey, guys.
Check out geekfathers at GUIpodcast.com.
Correct. And as the father, read the book, then watch the series. Always read the books. Even though I'm bad about it as well. But read the books.
You can read?
He's been known to read picture books from time to time.
Audio books are wonderful. Yes.
Another showrunner on the network from Beautiful Disasters, we got Herr Grootz here.
What's up?
What's up, man?
I'm just getting over some bronchitis, so if I seem a little raspy, that's why.
It's sexy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Grootz of schlock cinema auteur, I want to say, or aficionado, I guess.
Yes, I have a lot of fun. And next year will be some fun new additions to the schlock universe when it comes from my end.
Nice.
Ooh, okay.
More details to follow. It's going to be fun.
Nice.
I am interested to hear kind of your insights as a schlock enthusiast. I mean, we all do appreciate it to an immense degree about just the haunted house like trope and how Midnight Club and the other two haunted house shows on Netflix that Flanagan has done, how like plays with that trope.
Unbelievably fun. And yeah, the fact that first off, this is not only a great small series, but it's also an anthology with all the little stories inside of it, which directly reference what's going on in their lives. It's brilliantly woven. I bet the book's actually pretty damn good. You know,
I mean, I'm not one to normally pick up a YA book in my 40s, but I'm intrigued. I might be interested, and that's probably a really quick read too.
I would assume most of his books are like 150, 120.
But from what I have seen, the way Pike writes it, I mean, this material is coming from him.
Yeah,
it's on point for his writing. So,
but yeah, there's so many fun little nuanced and like little tidbits here and there, nods to things.
Absolutely. Next one up is my partner in crime here on the network and this show, my co-host, Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everybody? You talk about some spooky shit.
Spooky shit. That's what I love about this time of year. Is
it's all
laser
spooky.
Focus on spooky shit.
Yes.
Love it. Yeah, from Mouse Madness, Geeks on Jones, GUI Nights.
Yeah, all those all those things.
All the list of things that stresses us out on the weekly.
It's fun, and then it stresses you out.
Yes, no, absolutely.
It's, like, right. It's fun, and then it's like, oh, shit.
It's a weird balance, for sure.
I think anything worth doing is going to stress you out a little bit.
True.
The thing I love about the Midnight Club is I remember getting excited because they dropped something, like a post or two, sometime in October last year. And I was like, oh, because it was like right after Fear Street trilogy came out.
Mm-hmm.
They posted something, hey, Mike Flanagan's bringing you an adaptation of The Midnight Club by Christopher Pike. And I was like, cool. But then, like, nothing.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, hey, it's coming to Netflix. You're like, okay.
Yeah, there was, like no
bring
real
it. Okay,
conversation.
Cool.
No, but I liked that. You know, I forgot because, like, when it came out, I was like, oh, shit, cool. It was like, at that point, more Flanagan because I had finally got around to watching Bly Manor and then Midnight Mass in between, you know, because that had come out in between that. So I'd already gotten more. And I finally watched Oculus the first time over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was just a lot more Flanagan I'd watched, Abstentia. I pretty much killed and crushed his catalog in the time between when that released, when they said they were going to release it to now. So it was like, because up to that point, I think I'd only seen Dr. Sleep and maybe, Oculus, Origins of Evil.
Oculus. Ouija.
So I'd only seen those two films from him and The Haunting of Hill House.
Origins of Evil cracks me up because it's like, it's a sequel. And it's a sequel to a fucking bad movie.
But it's a good movie.
Yeah, but
Origins of Evil is way better.
Yeah, it's way better. Yeah. It's solid
Isn't it like
possession
the third
film.
Movie in that? Or is the second one?
Pretty sure it's the second one.
No, those are Ouija films. I think they've made three or even four.
But when Flanagan's came out, he was the I thought he was the second one.
I think Flanagan only did the one.
Yeah, he just did the one. But
that's why we only talk about it.
Came out. Yeah. So they have this like garbage horror movie that comes out. Everybody thinks it's bad. And they're like, let's do a sequel. And then they get Mike Flanagan before he's really known.
Yep, that's the
thing. And he just fucking knocks it out of the park. And people are like, holy shit. Like, where did this
First one could have been good. Could have been good.
Yep.
Wrong crew.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm behind on his catalog. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty to like catch up
on. They're actually running a thing, Flaniverse, on Netflix. So you can literally watch all of it.
Oh, yeah. It's called Time, sir.
Yeah.
Time.
It's something you and those terminal kids didn't have.
No, exactly. Exactly. And I feel it crushing me every day. Every day.
The man next to me, the founder, the man who's responsible for all of my pain and sorrow. Mike Dobbin Bickett.
What's up? GUIPodcast.com. Check us out. Subscribe, all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
This is the final episode of the Pod of Ween season for this year. So definitely dig through. Check out our suggestions for the 31 Days of Halloween, our double episode, the Vincent Price episode, this episode. Yeah. Plenty of spooky stuff for the final days. Unfortunately, Cabinet of Curiosities is coming out at the end of the week. And it's just the timing for that to get that in before Halloween. That's the Guillermo del Toro anthology series.
Yeah.
It's only the first couple.
That's right. Yeah, it's coming out, I think, tomorrow drops the first two episodes.
Yeah, the 25th.
But yeah, so just not in time for us to get it in for the Halloween season.
Right.
But yeah, plenty more spooky stuff to check out on probably Madness. We'll be covering some of that stuff at least.
We might do an individual episode, but I think we're just better off doing like a del Toro episode.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Damn.
Because he's got a lot.
Getting into Midnight Club. So the setup of this movie is basically there's this long established like mansion, basically.
Right.
It has been used over the years for a lot of different things. But for a long time now, it's been a hospice for teens that are dying. And then hijinks ensue, basically.
Duh.
Cults.
I want to find one movie where there's like an old mansion from like the 1700s. That they go in and there's like housekeepers that just come with the property randomly because that's like a thing.
Because that still happens.
Yeah. And they're like, so let me tell you about this house. And they're like, okay. It was like, beautiful property. It's all settled. So you're not going to have to deal with a lot of cracks in the walls and stuff. No, nobody's ever died here. Just like completely.
Yeah.
I feel every old mansion is just like lousy with fucking ghosts. That's just the rule.
That's what it is.
I feel like
and secret basements.
Accurate though. Well, secret rooms and tunnels and shit like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But what does that say for the ghost of the future real quick? Like, that's one of my favorite memes over the past couple of years is, why is it all these old ghosts?
Right.
When it should be the ghost at 3 a.m. going, I'm Britney, bitch, yelling at you as it runs down the hallway.
Yeah,
you know?
Like haunting a two-story rancher from the 70s.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Very much so. That's what I'm looking for.
Yep. Mm.
I want some, like, fucking poorly thrown together condo apartment. Like,
ooh.
I died during the 2008 like bubble burst of the real estate market.
That was scary.
Scary. Yeah. I do like also the positioning of the characters, even the storytelling of the different like anthology stories they're telling. There's an arc to it where one of the first stories we have is this like the ring style screaming girl that is like following this serial killer around.
That shit was jarring.
And it was jarring, yeah, it was also silly and kind of stupid. But
by the
fun,
fifth
stupid.
Or sixth time that it's screaming at you, yeah.
Yeah, but then that story develops over the entire, he keeps to be continuing it. And then it actually
No, you just mixed up two stories. That was a different one.
Was that a different one?
That was a different one.
You mixed up. The one that you're trying to describe is that all of his victims are, they look like they're screaming, but you hear sound.
Okay. No, okay. Yeah. He was finishing the story of the screamy late girl that was following the whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of it. But at the beginning, the stories are kind of simple. They're very tropey. But as time goes on, they're incorporating more of their experience, their pain into these stories and what they're, you know, what they regret, what they want.
Well,
and that's where it gives the stories more nuance.
It's the reflection of their life, what you start to see. And like, you know, because there's some gruesome shit in the stories in a lot of them. But then when you sit there and think about how you overthink something and how they're telling what's happened in their life, and they're not only dealing with bad shit, but with getting cancer and dealing with the chemo and everything on top of that, they're having a rough time. And yeah, no shit, they're going to tell fucking scary stories and gruesome shit to help like relieve that pressure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's a perfect sort of way to convey what's going on in their lives and then, you know, them to get out a little bit of that tension. And I think nothing did it better than Anya's doppelganger story.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably one of the top ones, about her backstory
and her addiction. Oh, my God. By the way, Anya was the best character of the fucking show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Anya was
100%.
Best arc, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. My God.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the only one that I was, like, so curious about, I need to know something about this. This girl had never acted before.
Yeah, this is her first acting gig.
She was found by Flanagan on TikTok because she is an actual amputee and she was just had such a personality. He was like, you know what? I want that girl.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. She paid off.
Played angry better than Lowdown does. And that's a high bar.
So. Oh my God.
That is.
Yeah, when I'm watching like, damn girl, like, you know,
when Lowdown's like, you need to calm down.
Right.
Calm the tits, cool them down. Jesus Christ.
But that was the brilliance of that character is because it was annoying. To a degree, like when she's first on screen, she's so angry, she's so mean. She's, so,
fuck you, fuck this, everything.
Everything is a fucking exhausting, like, fight with her throughout the first few episodes. But then that arc where you're rooting for her and you see, like, where it's coming from, and so you identify with her more, and you get why she's so upset, and she gives a little bit of room and understanding to the other characters, and that switch to so when she ends up passing... Like, you're crushed.
And that episode where you think it's a story, but it's all the stories because she's having that life flashing in front of her eyes.
Holy fuck.
She's like, this is Jacob's ladder shit right
now.
I was like, holy shit.
Going like to work every day, yada, yada, same thing.
But then things change gradually with it.
So well done.
And this is just not only the way she portrayed it, but the way this character was just written as well was for to be the angry one, to be going through all this, have that slight turn, but then not only be a terminally ill cancer patient when basically the knowledge is that we're all going to die one day. And she sits there and goes, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she changes that reflection of what could be happening,
that
was, oh.
I'm thankful that I haven't had that moment because I'm just thinking about like what would be flashing through my eyes, and it would just be like the Taste the Biscuit song from TikTok playing in the background Well, there was just a bunch of pop culture references. None of you are on TikTok, so you don't get the reference, and that's probably why we're still friends, because I repost all the Taste of the Biscuit.
Do you know why videos. I'm not on TikTok? Because of what you just said.
Yeah, because you don't want... Because
I don't want to die and be like, oh, I got a TikTok thing in my brain for the last 5 seconds of my
You don't
want to
taste
life.
The goodness of the biscuit, and I understand completely.
No, I'll go eat a biscuit.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go eat a biscuit.
Fucking jingle.
Part of the reason why she's in a wheelchair isn't just because she's an amputee, but because like she's so weak that even having... a prosthetic isn't really an option for her at this point.
Right.
And you realize, like, yeah, that just adds another layer of the realizing just how much constant pain she's in.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one thing I want to make sure we cover is that all the characters were developed wonderfully. It's just Anya is the one that hits you straight in the face right in the beginning, besides the main character finding the place. But all the backstories develop from all the kids telling their stories, it's when you first hear the story, you kind of have an idea, but you don't get the full depth of it until like really those last two episodes of where just everything kind of culminates together. And like, you're like, oh, it's not just the cancer. It's this, it's this. And the layers are beautifully
done.
You
know, honestly, like the actual main character in my opinion was the least fleshed out.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. The one that took me by surprise was, the Japanese girl of Japanese descent, Aya or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where she had this amazing, that's the one with Henry Thomas and the girl from Starry Eyes.
Yeah.
Was in that
she
one.
Was also in Dr. Sleep. She played the Shelley Long character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was an allegory on depression and suicide. And it was so brilliant because it was like a fucking Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. Because we have the IMDb pulled up. What's her name? Aya.
Furukawa.
Natsuki was the name.
One thing, a little fun tidbit about her, and looking through the IMDb earlier today, is that she plays the Japanese schoolgirl in Cabin in the Woods, where they're watching the other, the Japanese people try to fight their monsters.
And they turn the monster into a frog or something.
Right, yeah. She's the main Japanese schoolgirl in Cabin in the Woods.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. I thought that was a cool little, okay.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah.
I loved the relationship that got that developed between her and what was the name?
The character's name was Amesh.
Yeah, Amesh. Yeah. Which Amesh, everybody has that friend that's just like a video game nerd from hell. That's like their entire identity is just being a gamer nerd.
Yes.
I loved the awkwardness of that relationship, and then him being like, "Wait, if you're not into me, that's cool," and having that self doubt, and her being like, "No, I'm just clinically depressed." It's about me not feeling like I deserve to be happy. And like that, for anybody that deals with chronic depression, like that realness of that moment was super important because it expressed like even the things that are really cool that are happening in your life, sometimes like you shy away from them or are nervous about them because of the depression. And so like that was really honest and thoughtful for them to include that kind of.
Well, it was also, I thought it was also thoughtful to include the other aspects of that. Like when she shows up late to the, where it was supposed to be his death day, right? And they're doing the ceremonial where they buried the suit he was supposed to be buried in. Mm-hmm. But then they go off to the side and she immediately is like, I smell real bad. Because of the clinical, of her depression, like she wasn't bathed. Like there's all those things that go along with that.
Yeah.
People might not realize, like you might not bathe for a fucking week and you just stay holed
up. Check out our T-Public page for the depression stinks t-shirt.
But I mean, I just thought that little conversation, just that one statement, I thought, because I noticed she looked really bad, but I thought, okay, her cancer kicked in or something. No, it was like, it kicked in overdrive. It was like, no, she's literally been locked in the room, not bathing, not eating for however long. And that's a big, I don't think people think about that.
Yep. And props to modern Hollywood skinny kids or whatever it was, but just the way the kids looked between the makeup, the way that their clothes fit them, terminally ill cancer
just the
kids,
thought of
like
having them wearing kind of baggy clothing, so it suggests
even though it was the 90s
they were when they got those clothes.
Though it was supposed to be the 90s, it was still like just didn't fit right, you know, like
It was like an episode by episode game of hacky sack as to which one's most depressing, because like because you think about it, like the one that had like the rich jet-setting actor movie parent, you know, that never showed up.
Was that Sherry?
Yeah.
That was super depressing.
Yeah.
But then, right. you know, at the same time, like...
I liked how much they were like, oh, you're full of shit. And she's like, yeah, no, I am full of shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But by the end of it, like, oh.
family never came.
Yeah.
Ever, you know, sort of thing. The dude that had, like, the overbearing, like, mother and, like, the, you know, he was, like, prom king.
Oh, he was legacy. The little brother was supposed to be the legacy after, dying brother and that. Oh, man.
And then, of course, like, you know... The gay dude who, you know, had AIDS and was like basically disowned by his mother.
Dude.
I'm so happy about that.
That conversation he had when he went to the house, when he's that was fucking awesome.
That's like Emmy worthy right there. That was such a powerful.
Yeah, that was
powerful.
Oh, good.
Right moment. Great as Mike Flanagan made this visually, Christopher Pike to write about this, because this is taken from the book that was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Think about how weird. Like,
because I was about to read an article that said the differences between the show and the book, and I don't think his character.
It's not as, but these topics still came up and just may not be as direct, but the topics were still there. And for any of these topics, let's be perfectly honest, in the 90s was still almost taboo to even talk about in certain circles.
They're fleshed out probably a little more in the series.
Oh, sure, sure,
I don't remember that they touched on that with that character. Period.
These themes, that each of these characters are going through they're huge, and they have to be, you know, delicately handled.
Mm-hmm.
And there are shows, there are lesser shows that are lesser directed, lesser written, that will have a bunch of themes like this, you know, because they feel like it's that time to make a statement, but they do it poorly. And then it's just, it's wasted.
Yeah. Yeah.
They wasted did it opportunity. So deftly and brilliantly here.
Absolutely.
And the writing with, I think Flanagan, is it his brother that goes into the writing for everything? I think it's Jamie Flanagan.
That sounds right. But
something like that.
I believe so.
I have to look, but I mean, they've collaborated a bunch of times. And so the writing, whatever adaptation was happening, like I said, I haven't read the book.
Yeah, Jamie Flanagan did a couple of the episodes.
Yeah, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much was verbatim, how much wasn't, but it was these, you know, it's dangerous. You know, some of these things, like if you fuck up the gay guy's storyline and that arc,
right,
you're sunk. Well, that was so important to get right.
The diversity of all these characters is like dramatic, and to be able to create, you know, what the conversation is being had about the characters in the series is agency, is giving all these kids agency over their lives and over their experiences. So that's what needed to be portrayed in these episodes, is to give the characters agency, like in like their stories, their experiences, their who they represent in the world. And they were done so immensely well. There was nothing but respect to everybody's like stories.
Well, and that just brings up the ultimate point of bringing in Heather Langenkamp for her character, because that was,
immediately I'm getting like Nightmare on Elm Street 3 vibes of like, let's get these kids together to fight the evil. I'm like,
even though it wasn't quite like that, it still had that twinge of just like, ooh, I feel Dream Warriors coming on. Yeah, right. You know, it's like, I feel it.
Where's that docking track like in the background?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, but for her, not only to play the way she just swapped characters, because they used her face like for characters in the stories.
Yep. She was in like, what, two other ones? One with like a really bad, like 50s noir accent. That was terrible.
That was kind of the point, though.
I know. She
played characters in like three of the different stories, but just...
So like transatlantic... accent, like,
yeah
it was rough. But like what she did for like that devil character in Anya's story, you know, ones like that, and then just seeing her arc of just like, and especially the way the last episode ended.
So we got to talk about one of the external factors to this hospice.
Definitely not a
different movie.
Yeah, whoa.
Terminally kids, terminally ill kids being like, fuck it, I got nothing to lose. Like, let's fucking do this.
No, it's the weird hippie, health, you know, supplement company out in the woods.
Right.
Played by, of course, what's her name? Samantha Sloyan. who's been in a bunch of Flanagan stuff.
She was the religious zealot character in Midnight Mass.
She was a neighbor in Hush.
The most fun to hate. And Midnight Mass.
I was super intrigued where that was going to go. And like as they were building, like, you know, the magic and the witchcraft sort of angle of the show. But I felt like at the end, it just kind of chopped it really quick. And it was like,
But like, I at that point realized they were definitely aiming for a second season with this.
Yeah.
And
oh, for sure. Yeah.
There was definitely something about that character that wasn't right from the get go.
Has this been renewed? Do we know?
I have no idea.
I haven't seen anything yet.
I didn't know if this was going to be a one and done style thing.
No, it's supposed to be set up for multiple seasons.
They definitely set it up for multiple seasons. Yeah. I mean, even the reveal at the end with the neck tattoo was really.
That's true.
Suggesting. Yeah, what I was getting to with Heather Langenkamp, where she removes her hair, like she has cancer still. And
well, and also, I mean, you can really build out this mythos beyond what the book was about. Even with the characters, you're going to have these characters like dying as time goes on. They're going to.
Yeah, so you can have a rotation of new characters.
Rotating cast of characters coming in and telling their stories and continuing the Midnight Club and then like getting deeper into the mythos of this cult that used to live on the property.
The Paragon.
And I love that we're like a half hour into the episode and we have not even really touched on the spooky part of this series at all. We've talked about their stories a bit. And not even my favorite story. My favorite story was definitely the time travel story.
Which one?
The Amesh story about him being a
that was cool as shit.
Wait a minute, what other programmer? What am I missing? What am I forgetting? Two of them. The Amesh one about the like doing the destruction.
The guy coming back from the future to kill.
Oh yeah, that's the Terminator style one. That's Terminator. Right. Yeah. I totally didn't even think about that one as time travel, just because of the way
even
the
though
story
was time travel.
Yeah, my brain, man.
I got you.
My brain.
But the Amesh one, sorry.
Yeah, the Amesh one where he meets this like programmer that he really respects and like he develops a simulator that's beyond anything he's seen, and then it's incorporating his crush on his fellow terminally ill
what's telling that, that's what we really said, we're at that point now where we're seeing it's like I think the second one into where we're seeing the mirroring of the reality that we're in, and that was the other one where like you really in the stories I really started see like looking for the actors, like because that's what Flanagan does, and we got dude from Midnight Mass, Haunting of Bly Manor. I think he was a Dr. Sleep. So the guy who plays him is an adult. The creator, him.
Yeah. What's his name? He's an incredible actor. And
He played the sheriff in Midnight Mass and all that. Yeah.
And man, the thirst for that dude.
The cook in Haunting of Bly Manor.
I haven't seen Bly Manor Coley yet.
He plays Vincent Beggs in the story.
Yeah. So it was cool to like, there he is. Like, I was just waiting for him to pop up because I love that dude.
He's great.
Awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome.
But I love, we have not talked about the Paragon a lot. We have not talked about, besides mentioning the New Agey group, quote unquote, that lives off the property.
Right.
And we're a half hour in. That's great because, I mean, in the meantime, as they're developing these like well fleshed out, nuanced characters of terminally ill kids, they're also telling a spooky story. Like all these little stories, and then this overarching story of this like creepy mansion that has a secret basement,
weird shadow creatures, ghosts. Yeah.
When they did the double push of the buttons and went down to the sub basement, I lost my damn mind. I was like, yes.
What especially they had
secret
that,
society
the
shit.
Far away camera shot of just the room being completely dark and this barely being lit from the light of the elevator as it comes down, and you realize just how vulnerable these kids are. In that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, we
talked about it with just the way Flanagan does stuff and just the way stuff is filmed in general, where you catch those, you have to look for sometimes the little detail or that extra shadow or the figure in the shadow type stuff, or you don't know if she's dreaming or not, but all of a sudden it turns into almost like it's a black and white film. Where it looks like she's in the old time, but she doesn't know if it's the meds
It's got that rare, like
sepia tone.
There you go. Thank you.
Yep.
I also want to know what happened to Mike Flanagan with like with an elevator or a basement or something, because like there's a secret basement in The Haunting of Hill House. There's also the food elevator. What do they call them? The
dumbwaiter.
The dumbwaiter. There's the dumbwaiter with the buttons that works funky that goes to the secret basement, just like the secret basement in this one. Like. Something fucking happened to him in his childhood where he was caught in the dark in a basement.
Or basements are creepy.
Well, basements are creepy. One of the things that is
because people know basements are creepy
is another fair. Like fear of mine that feels probably pretty standard is just walking upstairs in the dark. Especially if there's stairs that don't connect, you know, like basement stairs where there's like an openness between the steps.
There's no railing.
Yeah.
It's fucking.
It's like bare minimum boards and nails.
Yeah, between the steps, there's not that like other piece of board going up that like blocks it so that it's a solid step. It's just so somebody could reach through and grab you.
You mean open actual steps? The actual steps. There's no back.
Right.
Oh man, you're going up those steps in the dark. There's something. Yeah.
Wait, that's just from watching Evil Dead too much.
Well, there's that, and yeah, my mom's basement at her house has steps like that, and it's just all like concrete floor, you know, unfinished basement where the wood stove is.
I got you.
And there's nothing creepy down there; it's just old boxes and shit. But man, there's something about you hear just like the wood stove going down there, which is the lightest glow, and then there's no lights because you have to turn the lights off downstairs. And go up the stairs, and then the stairs, your feet are like hitting just a little bit past the end of the step when you're walking up. So you like your toes are kind of hanging over a little bit as you walk up, and because they're narrow stairs, and it's just, it has all the elements to be like, if I just felt like a brush on my back as I went up, I'm running into the woods, never to be seen again. Like, that's it for me.
I'm not going back to the fucking house.
I run out of the basement, out the back door, and just yelling, bye, and then I'm done. You don't see me again.
Fair.
Yeah. Like Forrest Gump, just beelining.
I will say he has...
He was running!
He's made very excellent choices when it comes to how he utilizes the basement, because there was even a basement in Bly Manor that pops up.
Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of similar kind of tropes in his movies and shows and stuff, but like he does utilize them differently.
I was about to say they definitely don't feel like it's just doing the same thing over again. It's using the elements, using what's there, and it's Flanagan fucking just kills it with that shit, man. The lighting and just the angle shots that he gets on stuff, man, it's great. Yeah,
I think it's almost like just a sense of isolation, whether it's being out on a boat in Midnight Mass
to tell
a story, or, you know, like even in that same show, there was like that one abandoned house where the thing was
but nobody would go to,
and because anybody went near it had a bad day.
He
definitely knows how to use light, how to use sound well. I mean, like just the first time they were in that basement and she's lighting matches and of course sees something move, you know, and like the use of shadow, the use of like little things, like it doesn't have to be, it was almost thrown in our face with that early story where it was like the Japanese ghost jump scare that was like 50 times.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of like, that was a nod. It was fun, you know,
there was kids having
a good time with the story, but the way he actually did the scares in the show was awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
well, very well done.
Always been good at mixing the dread and tense moments with the jump scare moments in his stuff that he's done.
Oh, and let's talk about the ultimate jump scares, where that great mix of telling the story, something lighthearted would it be happening, and then someone just walks through a door and all of a sudden you have another ghost, I'm hungry, you know, and you're just like, what the, hold on, oh yeah, I forgot this is a ghost story too.
Yeah.
You know, you just totally forget about where you're going with it, and just that change of scenery was like spot on. It was beautifully done.
I think we're at a good place for our break, for our mid-break. So, I mean, there's so much more to talk about. The Paragon specifically.
Oh yeah.
We haven't dug in too much at all.
I guess we should actually hippies. Talk about the story arc of the whole
series.
Yeah.
Goddamn hippies.
Goddamn hippies.
I think it was very important that we shared some reverence for like the characters and how well fleshed out they were. And the important conversation was about like the idea of being a kid where your life is supposed to be ahead of you and knowing that you only have a little bit of time left is a really, really rough start. That's where you're starting. Yeah. What scares those kids? You know, like what
exactly?
What's
going to
scare them more than ghosts. Their circumstances? Yeah, and the
ghosts. That's what scares them more.
Yeah, ghosts
and poisonous tea.
Poisonous tea. So stick around. Listen to some of the other shows that we have available on the network, and we'll be back in just a minute. Stick around.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there is another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F.U. Hunter.
Your guide at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world? This is Smack My Pitch Up.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
We're back for the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, all things Midnight Club.
Yes.
The Mike Flanagan directed or produced and directed series based on the Christopher Pike novel. But before we get back into that, we're going to talk about our sponsors a little bit. First up, of course, is Amazon.com. The season of spooky is about over, but there's plenty more holiday season in the ahead of us this year.
Yes.
And of course, this is the time that most people are using Amazon.com. So as a gift to us here at Geeks Under the Influence, during the holiday season, as you're gearing up to start buying presents for folks, getting ready to buy all those holiday decorations, just remember to go through the link at GUIpodcast.com. Go to the main page on the upper right-hand corner, click on that link. Anything you purchase, we get credit for. So use that as a way to give us a little gift this holiday season by just shopping through the link. That's it. That's as easy as that. You don't have to spend any more money. Just shop through the link, and then we get credit. And that's your little gift to us for the holiday season.
If anything, take it as you're taking money from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so they're making less money because some of it's going to us instead. So, yeah, fuck the man. Save the GUI.
this is not Empire Records.
No, it's not. It's not. But
nice try,
way
though.
To more directly help us out here is by going to our store, TeePublic.
Yay!
There are deals all the time on the store, so if it's full price, wait a couple days and check again, and it'll probably be on
almost
sale.
Every weekend there's a sale.
Almost every week. And we have so many designs. We're going to be keeping up even our spooky season designs through the holiday season as well. So if you didn't get a chance during Halloween to get one of those silly, scary designs, we'll have our holiday season stuff, the GUI logo with the hat, the Santa hat on it and stuff. We're going to be dropping those here after Halloween as well. Pick those up.
Pick up
all the designs for the different logos of the different shows. Stay tuned for more interesting designs that are going to be dropping between now and the end of the year. We have a lot of stuff coming your way, and all of the designs and inside jokes are all going to be on our TeePublic store. It's GUIpodcast.com/store. That'll take you right to the TeePublic page. And we've got stickers, t-shirts, hoodies for
coffee mugs.
I mean, fall season, perfect time to get your first GUI hoodie, or second or third or
fourth. Or roll the coffee mugs to make warm drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
I mean, we're about to discuss some of what we're drinking, which includes hot cider.
I think this would taste much better out of a Live, Laugh, Love.
Human Centipede GUI, mug. Yeah, absolutely. So go to TeePublic through our link at GUIpodcast.com/store and shop away. Enjoy some of the designs. And that's our sponsors. Now on to the real motivation for doing this.
The lube of the show.
Yeah. A little less than 8 years ago, we decided that we wanted to record our dumbasses drinking a lot of booze and talking about geeky shit. And one of those things is really focused on this segment in what we're drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey,
we're drinking. We're getting drunk.
We've got some nice choices for this one. Grootz was very thematic in choosing, well,
red wine.
Yeah.
Red.
Was that
wine.
A share, by the way?
Yes, you may absolutely have some. I did not bring.
I can grab some cups in a second.
Yeah. It's just a nice, dry.